medicine has changed. It's now become more centralized and less decentralized. And I try to tell doctors, if you plug into both nature and a thing like Bitcoin, you can actually create freedom and time. And it's very counterintuitive for people to understand it. And I've become pretty passionate about explaining to people how health and wealth really are functionally linked through decentralized, you know, medicine and decentralized monetary network, so that they can improve their life, get more freedom, get money back.
Guys, welcome or welcome back. My name is Michael Bullock. I am the founder and host of the Man of Mastery podcast, tribe, community, movement, journey. We are all here on this journey, the lifelong, never-ending journey towards self-mastery. Like me, I know that you are interested in that, in becoming the better version of yourself every single day to create, live, and leave your best possible legacy, that we're all here to get from good to great to truly holistically successful, exceptional in every area of life. And that's why we're here, to find and learn from the best in the business in all those different areas. That's what this podcast is here to do and to support. And I would ask that one of the things that you can do to support and be of service is to continue to share this information and share this podcast and this community with others, whether that is through liking and rating the podcast, whether it is literally sharing the podcast, whether it is sharing a post, or, you know, screenshot your phone playing this episode and post a screenshot on Instagram or Facebook. Anything you can do to bring others who may also benefit into this movement, be of service to them by doing so. And I guess by way of an ask or another announcement before we dive in today, this one is coming out shortly before Father's Day. And I just want to bring attention back to one of our past guests who's become a great friend and is part of this same community, Brian Dougherty, founder of the Declan James Watch Company. Just an amazing guy dedicated to legacy in creating timepieces. And as a dad of two young boys, and as a husband, and as a veteran serving our country, this entrepreneur and his timepiece company, the Declan James Watch Company, they make an amazing piece. And I don't know if this is the case this year, but oftentimes he'll run sales or discounts that he offers around things like Father's Day. So just keep an eye on that. Check back for it. I love the idea of success amongst our own tribe and community here, and continuing to foster that. So check out Brian and what they're doing at Declan James Watch Company. And then let me introduce you to today's guest, Dr. Jack Cruz. This individual, gosh, I've never done a podcast quite like this, where the sun is shining, birds are chirping, and we talk about some pretty mind-blowing stuff. I mean, some of this is just going to break the norm, right? Blue zone longevity, if you've heard about that. Well, he says, no way, that doesn't hold anymore. Skin cancer, what really causes it? You know, what's the incident underlying skin cancer that he's going to talk about? Blue light, what are some of the health? We know about health hazards, even interruption to things like your sleep pattern, but he's talking about blue light as a contributor to cancer now as well. But man, we're diving deep. Do you know what your mitochondrial haplotype is? And we're talking about thermodynamics. We're talking about decentralized systems in nature and in finance. So, man, strap in your seatbelt for this one. Dr. Jack Cruz is, he's going to go deep. I'm going to sit here and nod my head that I understand even 10% of it. But if you're anything like me, you're probably going to take a bunch of notes or want to listen to it a second or third time. Take notes and then go research, look up, find, and dig into some of these rabbit holes yourself. But bottom line, although Jack's got some very detailed science as a neurosurgeon to what he's going to share today, he is here to help better our health and our wellness, not only physically, but financially. And you know, those are two big components to what we're all after. So Jack's got a bunch of deep science behind it, rooted in in nature and natural rhythms on Earth and in the universe. So let's learn from Jack Cruz today in episode 82 of the Man of Mastery podcast. This computer. All right, fantastic. We're rolling with Dr. Jack Cruz. Welcome, sir. Glad to have you on this afternoon. Sunny afternoon down there in Panhandle of Florida on your side. We'll splice in an intro to this, but just by way of starting this conversation, super interested to talk to you today, learn from you. I know you are a respected neurosurgeon. You are very deep in the medical and biology field, but also fascinating to me that you extend that thinking and the proponent that you are to critical thinking into other areas, including financial and wealth and health in that area of currency, cryptocurrency, a very hot topic these days. So super excited to talk to you about both. I got some Spartan stuff on the wall back here, which is how I met Ben Greenfield. I know you've been on his podcast as well as Super Dads. Ben's super interested in mitochondrial health as well. So welcome again, doctor. Glad to have you today.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, fantastic. So you and I were talking a little bit off air as we started here about my audience, and a lot of us, I think, are getting into those years where we start to think about health and the later seasons of life. And you specialize in longevity. You have a company around it. Where's the best place for people to start thinking, and how do we start this conversation on longevity?
Well, I mean, I look at it like this. The most valuable asset that we all have is time. And I think most of us take it for granted. On the biology side, you know, when I do podcasts and we talk about health, I try to tell people your return on equity when it comes to time has to be health span. And just as when it comes to wealth, what good is being really wealthy if you don't have any money? And the person that always comes to mind, you know, on the finance side is probably Steve Jobs, dead at 56 from the use of his own devices. And then on the biology side, a former friend of mine who we were pretty tight with, I'm sure you know, is Charles Poliquin. And the key thing is, I want most people in my age group, because, you know, I'm a boomer in my sixth decade, I want people to know that if you maximize your use of a decentralized network, what does that mean? It has a big connotation for a lot of people, but basically it means there's no one between you and the decision-making tree that you have to make. So for example, we're designed by evolution to be in the decentralized network of nature. Nature is fundamentally decentralized. And when you realize that, who gets in between that relationship with us as we get older? It's actually doctors, of which I happen to be one. And how do we do that? Usually with big pharma solutions. So the middleman is big pharma. The goal is, when you get older, how do we limit the impact of middlemen in our decision-making? My belief is that the more you plug into a decentralized network like nature, the less that you're going to have to rely on prescriptions from doctors, surgery from doctors, and really all types of medical services from doctors. To me, that's the biggest return on equity that one can get as you age. The same thing is true on finance. And, you know, most people, I don't think, really understand that health and wealth are fundamentally linked. The number one cause of bankruptcy in the United States today is actually my profession, physicians. Mm-hmm. And it usually turns out that it's tied to actually cancer therapy. And cancer therapy begins to be a real big issue for people as soon as they hit 45, 50 years old. And cancer incidence, at least since I've been a physician over 35 years, has gradually gone up. When I was a young doctor, we only saw that in people that were usually above the age of 60. Now, childhood cancers and cancers in your generation, probably Gen X, Gen Y, much higher than it was, you know, when I was your age going through this. And I think part of the reason for that is, when I was a kid, we had an industrial economy. We went outside to do things. We didn't have things to bring us inside. And right now, I'd say for the last 30, 40 years, we've changed to a technocracy where technology has brought us inside instead of outside. And I don't think that we've realized how that change has actually changed our biologic trajectory. And, you know, for boomers who are, like you said, on the back nine of their life, many of them would be afraid of, you know, cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin. But when I explain to them that Bitcoin is the only truly decentralized man-made network that's a monetary network for value that traverses space and time. They get it. And the interesting thing is many people in the Bitcoin community are millennials, and millennials tend to hate boomers because they think somehow we stole their future from them, until I casually point out to them that it was my generation that built the internet. It was my generation that built iPhones. It was my generation that built Intel, Microsoft. And I tell them, you know, right now, Bitcoin is decentralized. And if you understand when you plug into that, you can get a huge benefit. You know, boomers that are my friends who've owned, say, a lot of gold, I point out to them, if you tried to, you know, send $100 million of gold from, say, Destin to San Diego, where you're at, it would cost you $10 million to do that. Same thing with Bitcoin, would only cost you about $1.50, maybe 10 bucks tops. That's why when I made the comment that anything that's in a decentralized network can traverse space and time, it's not meant to be a woo statement. It's actually factual. And the other thing, the reason why decentralized networks are important for people to understand, they're the most thermodynamically efficient way to do things. And I spend a majority of podcasts explaining to people how efficient photosynthesis is in trees, or how efficient it is when it comes to mitochondrial medicine. And I think people kind of get that, but I don't think they really understand it well when it comes to finance until, you know, I break out from them. What's the difference between, say, Warren Buffett's ideas and, say, people investing in Bitcoin 10 years ago, and explain to them, if you shunned Warren Buffett's ideas, who's probably in the generation above me, and you actually benefited from Satoshi Nakamoto's monetary network and invested in it 10 years ago, you'd be much more effective. And the reason why is the asset is growing at 230% a year. See, but Buffett's idea in a centralized network was to take time compounding, go over 56 years, you become a billionaire. The only metric to make that operational is you had to have a stock that returned 5 to 10% a year. But the key metric is it can never lose money in any year. If you do that, you'll be a billionaire. It just takes you a really long time. Most of you know that Munger and Buffett are, you know, more ancient than I am. The crazy part is, and this is what I teach physicians, because right now physicians in my life, we used to not, you know, be number one in suicide. We used to not be number one in burnout. And now we are. And the reason for that is because medicine has changed. It's now become more centralized and less decentralized. And I try to tell doctors, if you plug into both nature and a thing like Bitcoin, you can actually create freedom and time. And it's very counterintuitive for people to understand it. And I've become pretty passionate about explaining to people how health and wealth really are functionally linked through decentralized, you know, medicine and decentralized monetary network, so that they can improve their life, get more freedom, get money back, you know. And I never thought in a million years that I'd be able, you know, to help young physicians out, create monetary wealth so that they wouldn't have to be employed physicians. Because when I first came out, there was no such thing as an employed physician.
Right.
And, you know, now 98% of physicians out there are employed. And this is bad news for a guy like you, because when you go to see a doctor like that, are you getting his opinion or are you getting the opinion of his employer?
Right.
And a lot of patients don't understand. That's part of the reason why doctors have to write some of the prescriptions they do, because if they don't, they don't get paid the bonuses that they're promised, even if they know it's not the right thing to do. And I think when doctors realize that they can unplug and plug into a monetary network that will return the benefit to them, that they don't have to go get a blue check from Twitter, they don't have to go get their paycheck from a CEO of a hospital system or a healthcare system, and they can actually practice medicine between them and their patient with nobody in between, to me, that's a huge benefit. That's why I signed up to do this.
I just had a conversation with a doc yesterday by chance. And we were talking about as children are born, the parents' choice, if they like, to collect a umbilical cord sample of tissue or blood to send off and have stem cells extracted and banked for possible future technology use in medicine. And And this doctor's hospital system precludes them from doing that. So the patient could say, hey, doctor, I would like to collect my baby's stem cells. And that doctor would have to say, I'm sorry, my employer, this entire hospital system will not allow me to do that.
Yeah, to me, that is the problem with centralized medicine. You know, the sad part about this, I don't even think a lot of the public understands. You know, they're pretty good about bad-mouthing us in allopathic medicine, but I don't think they understand how the system has changed over the last 40 years to make it almost impossible for doctors to work on your behalf. Because if they do, doctors are now penalized for that. And penalized, especially now in the last 2 or 3 years, and especially with COVID, if you don't
penalize how financially, career-wise, reputationally,
they fire you. They will actually make sure that the primary care doctors at the hospital employees do not send you any cases. In other words, they will destroy your business if you don't fall in line with the party line. And that's, you know, that's exactly what, you know, communism or totalitarianism. Sorry about that. Tongue tied. Governments actually do. But I don't think people realize that we have medical tyranny right now in healthcare because of centralized medicine. And I almost hate to say this, but part of the reason why that's the case is because older doctors, I'm talking about the generation above me, got sick and tired of dealing with the bullshit, quite frankly, that they had to face because they were the Marcus Welby generation. I wasn't. But when I saw medicine change, because I was in that transition, I was like, how can I allow a CEO or a COO or a bean counter tell me how to treat my patients with disease A, disease B, disease C? And when I actually saw how they were doing it by pulling the financial strings, kind of like Pinocchio, that's when you had to worry about what's the ultimate long-term effect of this, you know, for patients long-term. And, you know, I think, you know, when we talk about return on equity, what are allopathic doctors really good at? We're good at acute stuff. You get, you know, a car wreck, you get a broken leg, broken arm, a subdural hematoma. We're great at that. But what do we suck at? We suck at the things that we have all these chronic disease epidemics in, like obesity, autoimmunity, diabetes. You know, those are just a few examples. And those are the things that are actually killing Americans. And when you think about the country that we live in, that shouldn't be the case. I mean, we're like 28th in the world in infant mortality. And, you know, we call other countries third world. That's ridiculous.
So let me ask you about a trend I kind of see or hear about in, I mean, no doubt, big corporations, whether that's medical corporations, whether that's pharma, whether that's insurance, or you start to see Amazon getting into the medical industry, you start to see Walmart. So when you start having like the doc in the box, urgent care type of stuff pushed out to the Walmarts of the world, where I can go in and have outpatient services, check on the simple stuff, that's probably also the high profit end of the business. Decentralized in the sense of getting it out there to many people, but centralized in the case of being controlled by a very few number of large corporations that are going to steer the course of the industry.
Absolutely. That's actually been the goal for the last 30, 40 years. In fact, that's the main goal of Google right now. They've done it, you know, with like AWS. We all saw that last year during the presidential election when Parler got deplatformed and people were surprised, but we've actually seen it in medicine. We actually had a doctor on Twitter almost get deplatformed for actually making a tweet about breastfeeding to a patient online about, you know, who just had a baby. And a registered dietitian turned him in, and it cost him $1 million to defend his medical license. That never would ever happen, you know, when I first came out. But that's the reality that we live in now. And I don't think
breastfeeding, which is endorsed by the World Health Organization, by the way. And I know anecdotally, unfortunately, of a similar story of a doctor who was encouraging their patient to think critically about the option for the COVID vaccine. Right. Yep. And was reported and has insurance and other issues now because of attempting to present sort of all the data and encourage critical thinking.
Correct. And, you know, the thing is, I think when you get in an environment like we're in, I think everybody can think, but thinking is not the most, I think critical thinking is the most important thing. And the reason I say this, I did a TED talk about 10 or 12 years ago that got banned because it was considered too controversial, because it was based around this idea of centralization versus decentralization. And I said in it, as the last line in the talk, ideation without execution leads to deletion of every good idea. Good ideas come from critical thinking. So if you really want to take it back to the nth level, where does critical thinking come from? It actually comes from mitochondrial redox. It actually comes from being plugged in to the proper, you know, decentralized network. Like, people don't look at planet Earth as the spaceship that traverses the Milky Way and the galactic plane, but that's what we're evolved to. And when we are told by doctors for the better part of 50 or 60 years that some of the things in this universe are not good for us, like the sun, which you can see me sitting in now, you got to start asking your question, who's benefiting from this advice? And unfortunately, I'd be venture to say that probably 98% of the people that watch this podcast, on the surface, you gave them a multiple choice question before they listen to it, to say, yeah, I definitely would use sunscreen. I would definitely do this because it's a problem. And I'm going to tell you the data is exactly the opposite. In fact, if it wasn't, the trees behind me and the wild animals out there should all have skin cancer, and they don't. And that makes you ask the question. And then when you say to the dermatologist, you know, there's another funny thing in the literature that you guys have. Those people that get melanoma, skin cancers of all type, they tend to have low vitamin D levels. Well, vitamin D is only made from UVB sunlight from the sun. So if the sun really was toxic, tell me why that's the case and why it's been shown in every single study that's in the dermatology literature. It's because that's not the type of light that causes the problem. But see, if they keep you out of the sun, what do? They make you an obedient idiot so that you keep coming back and getting a wallet biopsy through the centralized program. And then guess what? The profiteers that own the dermatologists and ophthalmologists do pretty well. And they try to muzzle guys like me that point out, hey, instead of believing what the doctors tell you, how about you go read their literature? And, you know, when I throw these papers in front of dermatologists, it's kind of like the end of a Bugs Bunny thing. Badee, 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 that's all, folks. They just don't get it. And the thing is, your evidence-based medicine is only good if the evidence is good. And it turns out, when you cherry-pick the data to support the narrative that supports the profiteers because they're paying your salary, 50 years after the effect, you see what I've seen, where I saw medicine changed. You know, if you looked at a pie chart when I first went to medical school, this is from 1986. Back then, doctors made 73% of the gross money that was allocated to healthcare. You know what it is today?
Less than 10%. Okay. I was going to say less than 15.
Yeah, it's 10%. And guess who now makes 73% of the gross profits? Hospital administrators. In fact, you can look at a trend for the time I've been a doctor. The single number one growth area in healthcare is become a hospital administrator and you'll make yourself happy. It used to be when I was younger, you know, your mom wants you to become a doctor. Now, it's, if you become a doctor, I would actually tell you you're an abject moron. I told both of my kids, if you want to go to medical school, I'm not paying for it.
Yeah, that does not look like a good ROI right now. Take me a little further on, because you are sitting in the sun, obviously, and I did want to ask about that, so I'm glad you brought it up. Sun exposure, and you mentioned vitamin D levels and UVB. So is there a certain time of day in terms of sun exposure, and is UVB more of the peak sun hours or the shoulder sun hours?
Well, sunlight is kind of interesting. You need to understand there's a lot of variables. So I'm going to tell you, the first thing you have to know is what your mitochondrial haplotype is. What does that mean? I'm going to make it simple for the audience to understand. I want you to think about a Ferrari. Everybody knows that a Ferrari engine, when it comes out of the factory, goes 225 miles an hour. Well, it turns out that each one of us, when we're born, we get our mitochondrial engine, which makes all the energy in our body. And I don't want to say it makes it. It transforms energy that we use into things that cells use. You want to focus in on that energy efficiency. So mitochondrial haplotype, comes in different varieties. For example, people born at the equator, they have L0, L1, L2. These are called couple haplotypes. This is most of the people from Africa. These people don't release any heat in terms of when they do physiologic work. This is the reason why a Kenyan or someone from Nairobi can go to Boston and destroy everybody else in those races. The flip side is those people tend not to do good. If you put somebody from Nairobi, say, in Boston for a multiple years at a time, that African-American would die of hypertension, diabetes, obesity, heart failure. Why? Because they have a coupled haplotype. Uncoupled haplotypes, which is what most of the United States is from Northern Europe. Why? Because when we migrated out of Africa about 70 to 100,000 years ago, there was a benefit to creating more free heat from metabolism. Why? So that we could offset the colder environments. So when you realize that, Black people who come from Africa who have coupled haplotypes, dark, dark skin, they can stay out in the sun for unbelievable amounts of time, and their vitamin D levels come up in kind. The problem is if you put a Black person, say, in Detroit or Ottawa, that's akin to taking a cactus and putting it in the tundra and think there's no biologic complications. And if you think about COVID, it should explain to you now why people with darker skin got COVID, because most of them live at higher latitudes. And that's the reason why, because vitamin D turns out to be one of the proxy chemicals that controls innate and cell-mediated immunity. Now, a person like me, who's from the 59th latitude, who has freckles and is white, I can now sit in Destin and I can sit out just like an African-American could for 12 hours a day and not get French fried. The reason why? Biology has built something into us called the solar callus. If you understand how to use it, you can offset the risk. My people, we have light hair and blue eyes because we live at high latitudes. That means we can absorb sunlight because it's sparse and we can absorb it very quickly. The problem is if you take somebody from the 59th latitude and put them at the 28th latitude, which is where I'm at. Generally, that's equivalent to saying this house is wired in the 1920s and you just put a brand new Generac power source in it, you're going to blow everything up. But it turns out nature allows people that have uncoupled haplotypes to be able to handle with this slowly over time when you understand the quantum biology behind it. And that's kind of the stuff that I teach people about how it works. The problem is when you have a coupled haplotype, it's very, very difficult to live an uncoupled life for a really long period of time. And this is the reason why, even in the southern part of the United States, where we're between, say, 28 latitude and maybe 35, we have the stroke belt for people with dark skin, because they don't realize the 28th, even though it's subtropical, to 35, when you compare their haplotypes and their skin types, that's like being in the tundra to somebody who has got an equatorial haplotype. Haplotype is one part of the story. The second part is a Fitzpatrick score in their skin. So I told you, I'm a Fitzpatrick one because I have freckles and I'm a white boy. I'll try to give you an example. I can't think of the guy. Well, we can use Usain Bolt. He's at the 20th latitude in Jamaica. He's pretty dark guy. He's probably a Fitzpatrick 5. When you realize that he is built to be outside in the sun all the time without any real risk in, that allows him to perform really well in the things that he does. And, you know, athletically, we all know that he destroyed the 100 meter in history. And if you think about all the great runners that we've had that won multiple gold medals, you're going to see that they all tend to come from low haplotypes. In fact, I actually pointed this out, I think, to Ben Greenfield a long time ago. If you look at the top 20 rushers in the NFL, every single one of them, with the exception of one, comes from the southeastern part of the United States. So when you understand the metrics, turns out the way we use sunlight is different. So I teach people how to use sunlight based on these factors. So the answer is not a global answer that you're looking for. It depends on your N equals one context. And can I put it together for you relatively quickly without expensive labs? Yeah, I have a blog on Patreon that talks about how to build your solar callus the nature's way. And I tell people how to go find their haplotype. And then I tell them probably the single most important thing about sun to see the sunrise every morning. So it sets the circadian clock in your eye, which controls everything else in your body. And when it comes to vitamin D production, you have to have between 290 and 320 nanometer light, depending on your latitude and location. That time changes. So for where I am right now, that occurs this time of the year, since it's May 21st, about 8 o'clock in the morning, all the way to about 4:30 at night. The next month, that's going to expand out from probably 7 o'clock in the morning, all the way to almost 7 o'clock at night. That's not the case, say, in Atlanta. That's not going to be the case in San Diego, and it won't be the case in New York. We're fortunate these days because we now have apps on phones like D-Minder, and D-Minder is made by my colleague at Boston University. He's probably the foremost researcher in vitamin D biology, where you can actually find out, put your Fitzpatrick score in, they can tell you how many IUs you're making based on the latitude and the altitude of where you are at that time. So you can optimize these things for yourself if you decide you want to do your own mitohack.
Perfect. All right. So I'll have to get links and get links up to that, your blog on Patreon. I'm glad you mentioned the app. That was going to be a question. Point about circadian rhythm and the sun rise, getting that exposure of light through our eyes. I know a lot of times, you know, I'm going out with sunglasses on, right, that are UV blockers, and some, even some lenses like you've got on will be UV blockers. That light exposure, you need it without those kind of lenses, correct?
Correct. And the analogy for that is what I tell my patients, and I'll give it to you here in the podcast because I think people will be interested in it. If you and I, if I came to visit you in San Diego and you and I went out in your backyard and we planted an orange tree and we put the nutrients in the ground, and then your wife came out and threw a tarp over the tree, would we get any oranges?
Not so much.
So you got that right away. But what people don't realize, when you wear sunglasses, contacts, or even regular glasses, it changes terrestrial sunlight. What sits right behind your central retinal pathways in your retina? Your pituitary gland and your hypothalamus. And guess what pituitary does? Makes just about every hormone in your body. What does the hypothalamus do? It controls energy balance in your body. So when you realize that and you put that over the top, most people have never had the experience to see how big a change that is. So like when you come to my farm at the longevity clinic, I'll take a spectroscope, we'll go out, I'll show you what the solar spectrum looks like at different parts of the day, and then we'll put your sunglasses or your contacts or your glasses over the top, and I show you this is actually what you're getting. And it gets even crazier when I show people. They tell me like they have an indoor existence in terms of their job. And I said, do you know how glass affects, you know, the solar spectrum? And most of them looked at me like I'm crazy. And then I show them about 40 to 60% of infrared A light, which is the most dominant part of sunlight, is blocked by the glass in the window, blocks all of UVB. It blocks most of UVA. Some gets through, but not much, not enough for you to have the effect. So it has no effect on blue light from the sun. So effectively, living an indoor life, say in an office, is actually the same as being blue light toxic from your phone or your computer. And most people are stunned to see that. And most people don't understand it until they see the spectroscope to see the effect of glass in their house. And it's even worse when you understand that modern glass is different than the glass that we have like in historic places. Like I used to have a house on Bourbon Street in New Orleans. The glass there was made over 120 years ago. That glass allowed more red and more UV through than the modern glass that we have today. So modern, you know, technology actually is increase the problem, because what were they looking at when they made this glass? They were looking at trying to be energy efficient. No one ever realized that just the act of being inside makes us energy deficient.
Yeah, no, I did not realize that. That's pretty shocking. And it's just aggravating this blue light toxicity. So just one more, since you brought up sunscreen, besides the fact that maybe you're blocking some of these important UV and spectrum and so forth, beyond that, do you have any concerns with the content of sunscreen, or if somebody is going to use it, you know, what to use?
If you know the history of sunscreen, again, another a centralized idea that dermatologists and doctors came up with. It's now a $5 billion industry. They have gotten people to believe that the sun is toxic, when it turns out the real cause of skin cancer is actually the fake light that's inside. It's blue light. In fact, we know that melanocytes are stimulated by blue light now, not by UV light. The number one melanoma right now in the United States is not skin melanoma, it's eye melanoma. Guess what? From computers, from cell phones. On average, the United States citizen looks at their phone 150 times a day, and people don't realize that the color temperature of their screen is 5,750 Kelvin, which is solar noon, which is when UV light's supposed to be out, but it reaches that temperature because it's mostly blue light. And that's, those are the kind of key things when, what I just told you, that's a decentralized answer from your doctor to me, I should say to you, so that you can sit back and go, maybe I need to think about how I'm using light in my environment a little bit different. This is not something you're going to get told by the blue check doctors on Twitter. Why? It's beneficial for you to go get biopsies and go see them for either a melanoma on your skin or melanoma in your eye. You know, you don't make any money when you do things right. And I always tell people this, and I maybe you'll chuckle at it when I say it. It's kind of funny. I never have to teach lions and hippos quantum mechanics. I just have to teach humans it. And the reason I have to teach humans it, because they're the only animal with a brain, a quantum computer on this planet that are allowed to break nature's laws by the way they think.
So going back to nature, and we kind of started talking about nature and decentralization. In that context, when you say nature, do you mean nature, the external environment around you? Do you mean the nature of our biology within, or all of it together?
I mean physically what I'm talking about. I'm looking like where you're seeing me on the split screen.
Yeah.
This is what we're evolved to. Now, I wasn't evolved through my lineage at the 28th latitude, but if I adapted to it because, you know, 15, 16 years ago, when I started to realize that RNA and DNA are the hardware that are important in some respects, but not for most diseases. It turns out it's the other genome and cells that's way more important, which is the mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is the software that controls the hardware. And it turns out, guess what controls the software? Three things in nature: light, water, and magnetism. And when you realize that that is a function of what nature does, that's a completely decentralized network, meaning that it's completely chaotic, but our body is constructed to take perfect cues from nature to use it. So for example, most people know that the entire electromagnetic spectrum goes from radio waves all the way up to really nasty stuff like cosmic radiation. Turns out terrestrial sunlight goes from 250 to 760 nanometer light, which is visible light, which is very tiny. So we literally use 1% of the electromagnetic spectrum to run our biology. And when you realize that, you start to realize, well, what happens if a silly talking monkey, you know, 2 million years after it evolved, gets the idea that they want to invent an iPhone and connect it to the internet so that we can communicate doing a podcast about decentralization and centralization? Are there any biologic effects to using other parts of the electromagnetic spectrum with respect to the software, the hardware in our cells? Turns out the answer is yes. And we don't realize it. We think that there's no biologic conundrum to the fancy things that we do on technology. And it turns out Mother Nature has had about 3.8 billion years to innovate those solutions in all things that are alive. Modern man basically got the ability to use the electromagnetic spectrum probably in 1893 when Tesla, you know, built the AC power grid. And we started to plug into it to create all the devices that we all know today. Most of us don't realize that each one of those come with a biologic toll to a certain degree. And certain people have bigger risks than others.
Yeah, the three things that you just mentioned are super scary. Well, so you just scared me into getting the blue blocker glasses on. Light, we just talked about for a bit. Water, which is becoming a bigger and bigger issue, not just in terms of scarcity, but quality of water, clean water. And
that's not the water I'm talking about, just so you know that.
Okay.
I'm talking about the water your mitochondria makes.
Okay. So
let me explain this to you. Most people think that food, like when you talk to a food guru, you talk to a nutrition guru, they always think that food comes down to carbohydrates, proteins, and lipids. Here's the funny thing. When you open up a biochemistry book, you'll notice that the input to mitochondria doesn't make any shuttles for proteins, lipids, or carbohydrates. You know what it makes? The input of mitochondria is called electron chain transport. What is the output of mitochondria? It turns out it's protons, that spin FO head that makes ATP, and those electrons eventually go to oxygen. Here's the crazy part. The entire food web on planet Earth is tied to photosynthesis. Every food chain on this planet goes back to the sun. So when you realize that the sun can only interact, light can only interact with electrons, and mitochondria deal with electrons, everybody in third grade learned this. CO2 plus water makes sugar with sunlight. That's photosynthesis. You know what nobody realizes? That mitochondria reverse that process. It takes sugar and turns it into CO2 and water. Hmm. And it turns out the water that mitochondria makes is very different than the water you drink or the water that's in your CSF, which is in your brain, or in your blood. Turns out the water that your mitochondria make is deuterium depleted, meaning that it doesn't have a heavier isotope of hydrogen in it. And why does that happen? Here's the key point. Everybody learned about the Krebs cycle in probably freshman biology. You saw these crazy steps, but what did the biology teacher or the doctor never teach you is that we have three dehydrogenases inside a cell, and those dehydrogenases pick a specific hydrogen on the carbon backbone, the lipid backbone, or the protein backbone in which to feed in to mitochondria. Why? Because if you pick the wrong hydrogen, the whole system would break. Why? Because the ATPase needs that light hydrogen to work to make water that doesn't have deuterium. And it turns out when you break this process, you manifest disease. In other words, remember I told you before the mitochondria is like the energy in a Ferrari. It becomes less energy efficient when you put deuterium in the matrix. So it can't transform energy from the environment that you're in so that you can make the proper amount of ATP. How does that manifest? It manifests in us in disease. And that's fundamentally how it goes. And what aging really is, every decade you go up, we have a fancy term. It's called heteroplasm. What does heteroplasm mean? That we allow about 10% more deuterium in the matrix because the engines in our system don't recycle good as well as they did when we were 10, 15, 20 years old. And that process is controlled by two change programs that control mitochondrial biology, which are controlled by light, usually UV and red light. You've probably heard the names of those. That's called autophagy and apoptosis. Autophagy is a fancy name for recycling a bad engine. And apoptosis is when the engine is beyond repair, we replace it with a complete new one. Obviously, autophagy is a big deal for most tissues. Apoptosis, it's not a good thing to happen when it happens in your brain. You wind up with diseases like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, frontotemporal dysplasia, ALS, things like that. But we all know that those diseases have spiked in the 20th century and early 21st century. Why? Because now we're using a different environment that we're adapted to. We've done things differently. Most people in the food industry like to point out, you know, like things related to high fructose corn syrup and things like this. But you know what they never tell you? All those processed foods, you know what the big problem with them is fundamentally? They're not made by photosynthesis. They're made in a lab. So what does that mean? There's more deuterium. That's fundamentally why processed food is really bad for you. It's not all the things that you've been told, you know, through, you know, the last probably 10 years on the internet. And the craziest part of the story, when you understand how photosynthesis is reversed by mitochondrial biology, I told you it's light, water. The last one is magnetism. This is where most people truly shit the bed. They don't realize that mitochondria, through the process of metabolism, make chemicals that everybody's heard of called free radicals. What's a free radical? A free radical is a chemical that has one unpaired electron in the outermost shell. Why is that important? Because anything that has an unpaired electron has a magnetic moment. It turns out that magnetic signal is really important. Why is that the case? What's the terminal electron acceptor in mitochondria? It's oxygen. And it turns out oxygen is the only paramagnetic gas on the periodic table. What does that mean? It's drawn to things that make a magnetic field. Remember I told you the ATPase spins as protons go through it? Mm-hmm. The more it spins, the more oxygen is drawn to it to collect the electrons that come from your food. Now you begin to see truly how the Ferrari engine works. And it turns out that food has a totally different meaning to you because actually Food is an electromagnetic barcode of photosynthesis as we go around the planet, depending on where we live. So, for example, if you live in Boston and it's December 31st and you eat a coconut or pineapple, just because Whole Foods has it doesn't mean it's the smart thing to do because some stupid dietitian told you it's a health food. Turns out if it never grew in that environment, the sun at that latitude is being talked to your brain through your eye and your skin through these chemicals called opsins. And when you eat something that shouldn't grow photosynthetic in that environment, when you assimilate that into your body, you give it a signal of molecular chaos. We have a name for that in medicine, and you've heard of it. It's called inflammation. What is that problem? Too much deuterium gets into our body, and the mitochondria can't handle it. And what happens? Respiratory proteins shrink out. The ATPase doesn't do too well. And guess what? Your sleep gets destroyed. This is just one little part of this story. And that's the thing that makes quantum biology really cool. And everything I told you today about that is tied to the decentralized network that's nature. And to me, once you realize that you need to live a seasonal life tied to your haplotype and tied to your skin type, and you optimize it for the level where you live, actually optimized life is pretty freaking simple to do. You don't really need a doctor like me. You actually have a doctor in your own head, just like lions and hippos do. And when I can get you to realize how to optimize your biology for light, water, magnetism, magically you get better and you don't need prescriptions. You cut the middlemen out, and then you start to understand, why am I really paying Jack Cruz? You're paying for this information. You're paying for this critical thinking ability, which is kind of what you asked me in the beginning of this.
Sure is.
And when I go take this back, I say, okay, now that I gave you longevity and your ROI is better, let's talk about you making some money. Let me tell you about this decentralized network that man did create, the first one.
Great. Let's pivot to that. But before we do, and thank you for summing it back up to that level, because that makes great sense on how to get with you, figure out some of these things on how to optimize and then put them in action. So I think part of what I heard you say was, not only do we need to eat naturally versus man-made foods, but seasonally and locally, blue zones, these communities around the world where people are statistically living longer. What's the key there?
The key is Dan Butner lied to you. The data was cooked. In fact, the number one blue zone out where you are, which is the Seventh-day Adventist, they've already lost their advantage because their environment, specifically from technology, has radically changed. The same thing is true at Okinawans. The Okinawans used to have amazing longevity. Right now, they don't. That's changed in the last 10 or 15 years. So a lot of people have gone back and looked at Dan Butner's work when he wrote the book. No longer true. And the reason why, and I'll give you an example of this. You know, on the Indian subcontinent, we have a 5,000-year history of people being vegetarian or vegan. Those people never really got sick. You know where the number one place in the world where type 2 diabetes now is faster growing than any other place on the planet?
Same place.
You got it right there. And why is that the case? Well, it turns out when you eat a vegetarian diet or a vegan diet, and you bring Google and Facebook's data centers to that mainland 25 years ago to where Bangalore is, even though they're on the bottom tip of India that sticks out into the Indian Ocean, which is right at the 20th latitude, you have fundamentally changed their environment from 5,000 year history. And it's been a conundrum for epidemiologists to figure out why, in fact, this has changed. And what people don't realize is that blue light and non-native EMF change our ability to make vitamin D in our skin. So even if you have your skin in the game, you won't make it, because it turns out that the way we make vitamin D is from UVB sunlight, but it's not by enzymes. It's actually a totally photonic process where we take an ester of cholesterol called 7-dehydrocholesterol, change one double bond through sunlight. It requires mitochondrial water to make that conversion. So all EMF, meaning blue light and EMF that we've introduced, reduces mitochondrial water production. You can't fundamentally make vitamin D. And here's the craziest part of the story. The way you tan your skin more often than not is blue light and UVA light. So you can be tan, still have diabetes, and be skinny. And it turns out, guess what? Indian diabetics are different than American diabetics. You know why? Because they live in a subtropical environment. So they tend to be skinny. American diabetics who live a non-subtropical way tend to be fat. Mm-hmm. But guess what? They both have fundamentally the same disease, and it's been a conundrum for doctors to figure out. And the reason why is because they don't understand light, water, magnetism, or how mitochondrial medicine really works.
It's pretty scary stuff, but pretty mind-blowing at the same time. So
it's cool to learn how nature works. I think every kid who's been, you know, to a museum, when you learn something, I've always been, you know, totally curious. I'm like, I want to know why all the things I was taught in medical school, now I have to question, because as been a physician as long as I have, everything that I was taught in residency, most of it for chronic disease doesn't work. So, you know, you can take Einstein's axiom. If you keep doing the same shit over and over again, expect a different result, that's insanity. So at some point, as a physician, you have a duty to say, why is it that, you know, the calories in, calories out model and go exercise more doesn't really work? And when you get to the rabbit hole that you and I jumped down in the podcast today, you go, you know what? There's some confounding variables like light, water, magnetism, and mitochondrial medicine that doctors and researchers never code for. Like, for example, every single study in obesity is always done on nocturnal animals in a lab that's blue lit. So no wonder we don't get the answer. I mean, we're asking the wrong questions and we're studying the wrong kind of animals. You need to study this in actually mammals that are diurnal, that live in the sun, whose retina is photopic and not scotopic. And then you'll start to realize, you know, how leptin biology works, how melanopsin works, and, you know, why God or evolution put the major energy hormone in our body in our subcutaneous fat. Because when you think about it, it's the craziest place in the world to put the thing that determines energy balance in humans in your fat until you realize that it's totally a light mediated phenomenon. Then you go, now it makes sense.
And it's also stacked there in the skin. Skin's the largest organ in the body, right?
You got it. So
it's certainly also got the most surface area.
It's also the number one place where T cells are, which has been a big missing link in the COVID story, you know, on social media. T cell immunity is the reason why people were able to get away from it. The best vaccine one can get is the one I'm sitting in right now, not a messenger RNA or an adenovirus from Big Pharma. Again, decentralized versus centralized solution. Once you understand that you have a doctor in you, nature gave you some amazing things to operate. Once you understand how to use them, you'll begin to see, you know what? My body has so much wisdom in it. The problem is I need to get out of my own way because my brain puts me in situations that allow me to break nature's law. And I never realized fundamentally what a big deal this is. And you know, it goes back to your original point, why you wanted me to come on the podcast. Hopefully people have gotten from the discussion you and I have had that most of this comes down to critical thinking. I went through some failures in my own health and my own practice that taught me this stuff. And just so you know, I didn't learn this stuff, you know, in classical medical school or in residency. I didn't figure it out until afterwards when for about 10 years I was in practice, I was like, why aren't my patients doing better than I thought? And it's a really big conundrum in residency, because in residency, you only see your patients for a short period of time in clinic. When you're a private practitioner, you're seeing the same people over and over and over again over like 2, 3, 4, 5 years. In residency, you do your residency a couple of years and you're out. You may only see the person 5, 6, 7 times. So this is a really big eye opener when you come out in private practice and you're like, you know, in residency, I was able to leave. Now I got to, you know, be stuck with these people and I'm not giving the answers. It becomes very frustrating. And to be honest with you, that's actually why most doctors these days have become burned out. And now that we no longer use paper charting, we're now using computers to do all the charting. The blue light and the EMF from the computers have led to lower dopamine levels in the doctor. And guess what? That leads to depression, mood disorders, and eventually suicide.
Yeah, honestly, I was surprised, getting to know some doctors. I thought, well, what a fulfilling career, right? To actually help people, you should be very, very happy. And a lot of these guys are unfortunately not very happy. But Let's say we can live happy and live longer. And given that we're now about to live through a pretty bad financial and monetary crisis, we've punted the last few. We're living these peaks and valleys now, these booms and bubbles, but we've kind of punted the severity of the last two or three of them. If we go back, a decade plus to the global financial crisis, Bitcoin was invented. 2008, 2009 or so, right? So we've got something, this new concept, this new technology that was created, decentralized, created with a model of scarcity, right? There's a finite quantity to ever be created. How do we make that bridge? How is that decentralization similar to nature? And let's talk about how that's a tool that is really the polar opposite of the centralized monetary system in this country and really the fiat currency system of the world. Which, by the way, just so I think most people know this at this point, if we pull out my wallet, right, it's not a U.S. dollar. It's a Federal Reserve note, not even a government bank. That is a private for-profit bank that is running this whole mess that's about to run right into the ground in a bad way.
Yeah, well, I mean, remember that started the Jekyll Island in 1913. It was the great idea of actually J.P. Morgan's dad and J.P. Morgan, where the federal government kept running into these problems back at that time where they'd have boom and bust with the business cycle. So the Federal Reserve was created by a group of, shareholders. To this day, we still don't know. We have a pretty good idea of where they're from now. But what the problem is they have created these things called debt cycles. The last debt cycle, the end of it, most people know it's called World War II. Hitler was the guy that actually ended it because he created global industrialization, to defeat the Nazi army. What people don't realize is that from World War II, the thing that actually helped most of the world is Britain was the global reserve currency prior to Bretton Woods, which was in New Hampshire. Then the United States dollar took over in 46. From 46 through 71, our dollar was backed by gold. Nixon ended that in part because his Treasury Secretary told him if he did that, he would not have to worry about losing an election over trivial things like oil and food. The petrodollar was created. And for the last 50 years, that happened in August of 71, we have been slowly debasing our currency. What does that mean in English? You remember the last time we had a president in, the media made a big deal about him not paying any taxes. Just so everybody's clear, the guy that donated more money to Biden was Buffett. Buffett is a billionaire as well. No billionaires pay income taxes, but you know what tax everybody pays? It's called inflation. It turns out that inflation is created by monetary inflation. So what has happened from 71 to today? The amount of money printing that's gone on, which is focused on the M2 money supply, has gone through the roof. And COVID has actually maximized this, because we've printed almost 40% of the dollars in circulation in the world in the last 18 months. Mm-hmm. So right now, M2 supply means that monetary inflation is about 40% in January through April of this year. Who brought this idea to the market? Again, a boomer, especially to the Bitcoin millennials. That was Michael Saylor from MicroStrategy. He came out and said overnight, money got really scarce for him. And he realized that from talking to his CFO, that the monetary supply was about 20% inflation. Well, when we got all the data in for 2020, it turned out it was right around 25%. And now with the Biden stimulus and some of the general account from the Treasury and the second stimulus, which is called an infrastructure bill, total in 2021, we'll have another $10 trillion added. So total, the data for the first 4 months of 2021 is now at 40%. So that means 40% of your value. And I want to be very clear on this. That doesn't add in your local, and I'll tell you what yours is. The local inflation rate, because remember, inflation rate is not generalized to everybody. The base rate for monetary inflation is, but you in San Diego are facing 15.9% Chopwood Index. That's municipal and state. Where I am, it's only 8.9%. I have no state income tax, right, and I live in a low tax area. So that means for you to make money this year in the market, in any kind of securities, you have to exceed 55.9% Otherwise, technically, your portfolio is losing money. It may look like it's going up, you know, in the Fidelity account, but when you denominate it over the monetary inflation rate and your Chaplet index, it's impossible for you to make money. Guess what? That's effectively what's been going on since 08 to a great degree. And, you know, there's a lot of people out where you live in California who think they've become millionaires because of what's in their account through the wealth effect. And what they don't realize, if prices are held stable here and this is monetary supply and it goes down like that, that actually is inflation. And you can get inflation when prices are held stable, when the currency is actively being debased. And this is the crazy part people don't understand. So I tell people who own a lot of stocks and bonds, denominate your returns in gold, you'll be totally pissed off. Then if you denominate it in Bitcoin, you'll absolutely shit the bet. And you'll realize just how much money you lost. So when I started figuring this out, probably in about 2018, 2019, I started to realize, you know what? Here's my out card for neurosurgery. I said, I can actually use this asset that's built in a completely decentralized area, because I think of it thermodynamically. I look at Bitcoin as an organism, just like you and I are. Turns out the hash rate of Bitcoin is like the metabolic rate in a human. That would be tied to your T3 and T4 hormones. And it turns out that the difficulty adjustment in Bitcoin is totally tied to the circadian mechanism in us. So, you know, good sleep regenerates people. And it turns out sleep is totally tied to the circadian mechanism, which is controlled through sunlight and darkness. And it turns out sunlight in the morning and darkness at night after sunset is controlled by a heme nuclear receptor called RevRB. And we now know that. We didn't know that when I was in medical school. So we know how to tighten up the circadian mechanisms, because we all know that when we sleep and sleep well and we meet all the cycles, that's when we maximize autophagy and apoptosis that we talked about earlier. Right. What does that do? It recycles the engines in our body that make us thermodynamically more efficient. Turns out the difficulty adjustment in Bitcoin does exactly the same thing. So when you see that what Satoshi Nakamoto actually built is actually some of the very same things that are based in nature, and you hear that they're both decentralized, just realize there is no other thing on the planet that's decentralized but nature and Bitcoin. Mother Nature was built, you know, by whether you believe in evolution or God, either a God or just by fortuitous nature of the cosmos. And it turns out Bitcoin was innovated after a financial crisis when people got wrecked. And somebody got the idea, maybe we need to take this centralized power away from the Fed and give it back to the people. Let's have a peaceful revolution. Because if you understand Bitcoin fundamentally to what I'm saying to you today, buying Bitcoin for your first time today is like taking a vaccine against the people that formed the Jekyll Island, against the people that are in Washington, D.C., against the people. And I mean this totally on both sides. That means left and right. Instead of dividing us on left and right, which is what the government has been really good at doing for the last 50 years, we have to realize that it's about people who are culpable and people who are capable. And it turns out the people that are culpable are the people that we've elected. And the people that are capable of fixing this problem is you and me. See, we the people built Bitcoin. That's the whole idea behind Satoshi Nakamoto. And his idea was to build a decentralized network so that no one could get between you and your money. There's nobody there. Just like I told you before, when you come to see me as a doctor, Big Pharma is not going to come in and say, hey, Jack, this guy's got high LDL cholesterol. Let's put him on stat. No, we're going to put you in the sunlight because of what I told you before about how you reduced LDL cholesterol from the sun making vitamin D. And when you actually see this thing unfold in front of you, you start to go, man, I'm getting older. I want to maximize my wealth and my health. Maybe I need to start looking into this whole idea about decentralization in my life, in different aspects of my life. And then slowly as you creep towards doing that in your life, guess what you'll find? You'll get better and better. It's kind of what I tell my members. When you know better, you do better. And that's a function of critical thinking.
What do you mean, just to back up one moment on the parallel you drew between circadian rhythm and the daily cycle, right? That's cyclical. And the hash rate, the difficulty of Bitcoin mining, which is only going one direction, right? It only gets more difficult.
No, today it went down in a different direction. I don't know if you actually heard what happened today in Bitcoin history. The CCP came out this morning and banned all Bitcoin mining in China. Hmm. So since most of the nodes are over in China, what does that mean? Everybody's freaked out that it's going to get really hard to get transactions. If you understand what Nakamoto built, it's actually really bullish for anybody who's a miner here in North America, because the difficulty adjustment when you turn nodes off in a certain part of the network gets easier to run transactions in the other part. And that's exactly how biology works. Remember, it works on coupled systems, negative and positive feedback loops. And it turns out when I talk about this in Bitcoin rooms, like when I'm on Clubhouse, I explain to people that Bitcoin is the predator in the crypto space. Altcoins are the prey. Predators have to have prey animals to live. You know, unfortunately, a lot of Bitcoin maximalists are a little bit toxic. They tend to talk about altcoins like shitcoins, and I don't do that because I understand the process of where all these coins fit in. And it turns out that if you get rid in biology, like we have this experiment already in Yellowstone Park when we took the wolf out. Turned out when we took the wolf out, it actually changed the way the water flowed through Yellowstone Park. And nobody could believe that it was taking the wolf out, and it changed everything, including the deer population, badgers, and everything else. And there's a beautiful video on YouTube that Sir John Attenberg talks about this effect. The same thing is true in Bitcoin. When you change something in the ecosystem, it's going to have huge effects. And the thing is, I don't know how Nakamoto had the foresight to see these effects, but he did. He made Bitcoin just react like an organism so that it can react real time to the thermodynamic givens. And remember what I told you, truly what a decentralized network is all about? Archetype-wise, it is the most thermodynamically efficient network to do things. And that's what nature is, and that's actually what Bitcoin is. And when you understand that, you know, selling your gold and your stocks and your bonds becomes a lot easier proposition when you truly understand truly how Bitcoin is built. And yeah, it's a volatile asset, but you would expect volatility when you realize, unlike Warren Buffett, who hasn't realized, Bitcoin has gone up 233% in 12 years. If you would have invested $1,000 in Bitcoin 12 years ago, you'd have more money than Warren Buffett right now. You wouldn't have to wait 56 years and be 98 years old to have the success he has. And see, that's why I'm trying to tell you, what do you get from a decentralized network? You create freedom and you create time. And ultimately, what are we here for? What's the most valuable asset? How did we start this podcast?
We started with time.
Got it.
Yeah. Said differently or inversely, the value of Bitcoin that we're talking about, you and I living here, we're expressing it in terms of US dollar,
right?
So the inversion of that is how has the value of Bitcoin gone up relative to dollar value going down relative to Bitcoin? I guess one of the things, the bad news for your boomer buddies that prefer, gold and silver or whatever precious metals as real money, besides being able to transport it from Destin to San Diego and so forth, is that's a very manipulated market, right? Yeah. The price is determined by the spot market, which is hugely corruptly manipulated. Bitcoin being decentralized in its original technology, you couldn't touch it. Now we're creating ETFs, we've created futures. It's allowed more access, more participation, but it's also increased, I think, some volatility. It kind of increases this headline effect of what's happened in China today and so forth. So it's adding to the volatility. It affects short-term, that price expression. But does that concern you long-term?
No. In fact, as a boomer, I will tell you that I'm irresponsibly long. And I will tell you the reason I say that is because I fundamentally understand Bitcoin. And, you know, my modus operandi right now is to teach boomer docs how to get out of this system. This is the perfect way to do it. And it's also my way to teach younger docs how to get out of a centralized system. When they understand that when you accept the volatility, the reason you're doing that is because the returns are ridiculous. When you explain to somebody what 230% is, and I'll give you an example of this. If you were to put $3,000 or $4,000 away today, in about 2 to 3 years, there is a chance if Bitcoin just returns what its historical volumes are, you'll have $1 million in 2 to 3 years. Tell me where you're going to get that in real estate. Tell me where you're going to get that in stocks. There's nothing that's outperformed Bitcoin from the time that it's been around. And I'm going to tell you the reason for that is because it's fully decentralized. And I'm going to tell you, if you understand the scarcity thing, which you brought up before, but it works on Metcalfe's law, buying Bitcoin today is equivalent to buying Google in 1994. I'll give you a real estate analogy because I use this in my crypto classes that I teach doctors. Can you imagine being able to go back and buy all four corners of 72nd and Broadway in Manhattan for about $4,000 today, what it would be worth in real money today? Because that's the kind of returns that we're talking about. And the problem is, this isn't hyperbole, my friend, because you know how we know the money printer has not stopped. And if you understand where we are at the end of this debt cycle, if you read any of Ray Dalio's books, it's either going to be a war or a devaluation and a hyperinflation event that takes us out. And that means that the government right now has a huge risk. Will the people revolt against what they're doing? And we saw last year how bad it was just with the presidential election. What's it going to be like when 50% of the population realizes that the whole pretense of what's been going on in the last 50 years was to steal their value that they worked their whole life to create? See, the millennials, the Gen X's and the Gen Y's, they already get it. The boomers already don't trust the government because they saw, you know, their government replace Henry Wallace, who is the vice president of FDR, so they can install Truman to drop a bomb that didn't need to be dropped. And then the same guys that did that kill the president that we elected in 63. You don't have to convince a boomer that the government's full of shit. We already know they're full of shit. Now, what they're doing on epic proportions about our money. Remember what I told you before, when you have rich people and poor people on the same side, because inflation is the one tax you can't get away from, it's going to create an interesting situation. That's why I always tell people, we are now at the end of a debt cycle. And most of the people alive today on the planet didn't see the end of the last one. I was fortunate that my grandfather taught me all about the last one and how my family navigated through it. I will never forget the lessons that he taught me. Part of the reason I'm passionate about doing podcasts like this is to impact that information to newer people, newer generations, to let you know that everything that's happening to us today on finance didn't start in 1971. It started in 1913 with the creature of Jekyll Island.
100%. And I really appreciate you coming on to share all this. Let me ask one more thing before we try to wrap it up, and I'll give you your weekend, is in terms of crypto. So obviously you said irresponsibly long Bitcoin really as a fiat alternative. In terms of technology, are you an Ethereum guy do you participate in any other crypto?
Well, this is kind of funny. You probably don't want to hear this, but I was just in a clubhouse room with one of the SEC commissioners today. We had a really long talk with over 1,000 people in the room, and I asked some very specific questions. I will tell you that I'm a Bitcoin maximalist. I'm not really a fan of DeFi. I'm not a fan of Ethereum. And the reason I'm not a fan of Ethereum is very simple, and I think you'll understand it, is Ethereum is not decentralized. It's a centralized protocol, but they're building a lot of cool things on it.
Right.
Ultimately, when you understand that, it's almost equivalent buying Ethereum right now. While you may get some good returns, it's like putting your money in Goldman Sachs and saying, oh, I think they have my best interests at heart. Jack doesn't buy that.
I'm with you. Okay. Hey, I really appreciate it, Jack. I mean, ridiculous amount of knowledge you just dumped on us here. Where are the best ways to follow up, right? So I want to come back to am I coupled, uncoupled? I think I know the answer, but I want to go back to some of these metrics. I want to get involved. I want to see your blog on Patreon. I want to know more about how to learn from you, work with you. What's a good way for people to find you? Besides, apparently you're pretty active on Clubhouse.
Yeah, I'm on Clubhouse. I'm on all social media. You can find me on Twitter, Dr. Jack Cruz. You can find me on Instagram, Dr. Jack Cruz. You can find me on LinkedIn, Dr. Jack Cruz. You'll also see on LinkedIn, I have about 150 free blogs on mostly biology stuff. On Patreon, it's patreon.com/Dr. Jack Cruz. There I have series of blogs. The current series I'm in is the Bitcoin series. I got 28 blogs out on Bitcoin right now. I have a ton of stuff on quantum biology in Patreon. My older stuff is on my website. My website is jackcruz.com. I have a form there. My form probably would take you 10 years to read everything. It's free. You don't have to pay anything for it. There's about 4 years of blogs on jackcruz.com that you can find. And probably the newest thing that I have that's pretty cool, I started a TV program where I take parts of both crypto and actually quantum biology, and we do about 30 to 60 minute TV programs, and it's at quantumhealthtv.com. You can sign up there. And if you decide you want me to be your decentralized doctor, I am for hire. You can find out information about that at cruz@destin.com.
Cruz@destin, as in Florida.com.
You got it, my friend.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, sir. Yeah, the TV linking decentralized crypto and biology sounds fascinating and a great way to tie together the two things we talked about today. I really appreciate the time and the knowledge. It's kind of one of those rabbit holes that you just want to keep going down. So I would love to keep you longer, but thank you for your time today. I will jump out on all those sites and we'll get them out to the audience. I know they're going to be blown away as well. Thank you so much.
Awesome. I appreciate your time too.
Have a beautiful weekend, sir.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you again to Dr. Jack Cruz, neurosurgeon and CEO of Cruz Longevity Center. That one really ultimately was all about critical thinking, critical observation and questioning of conventional institutional knowledge, wisdom, the norm. And I know none of us here are really interested in the norm, the mediocre. We're interested in exceptional health, exceptional wealth, exceptional longevity. And this skill of learning and questioning throughout life, from nature, so, so important. So I really appreciate Dr. Cruz and his visit. He's got given a lot for us to learn and to think about here on this one and to go deeper on. I mentioned somewhere in my intro the Boundless book by Ben Greenfield, Wealth of Knowledge. It's an encyclopedia of health knowledge. Probably 600 pages long, and I know Dr. Cruz has been a guest on his podcast as well. Check out that podcast and check out Ben's book. Amazing detail in there, as well as there was from Dr. Cruz here today. So be sure to not only go do your own reading and research as you digest this one, but you can find links to Dr. Cruz and other things he mentioned on my website, the show notes for this episode at manofmastery.com/082. So you'll find not only links to where you can find Dr. Cruz, he mentioned Quantum Health TV, but also things like, for example, the D Finder app, vitamin D Finder app, how you can tune into where you are and maximize your ability to go out, natural sunlight, and get vitamin D production, things like that. So just one simple thing that was pretty mind-blowing to me to learn about today in this episode. Great one. That's episode 82 in the books with Dr. Jack Cruz. Again, show notes at manofmastery.com/082. Pleasure to be with you and bring that to you today. As always, I super appreciate you and your time, and I value it, and I value you being here. Again, share this episode, share this movement, share this knowledge, and share your passion for this with others. And reach out to me if I can be of service to you. Until then, get out there, get after it. We'll see you on the next episode.